The following is a conversation with Dodge Kia, international hunting booking agent, owner and operator of Accurate Hunts that provide education courses as well as guided hunts here in Australia, Australian hunting podcaster, and most importantly, my personal friend. Now, this is a fun episode. It's a unique episode because we were actually filming it and recording it on set at location while producing the first episode for season two of The Huntsman. So Dodge was pretty heavily involved in this process, obviously, and we had a lot of fun filming out of his buggy on the second night, I think it was, at about 11 o'clock. We cover a whole bunch of different topics. We talk about hunting podcasts in Australia. We talk about what happened during the episode up until that point and some unique situations that kind of put a bit of tension on the crew when we were filming it. We talk about guided hunts in general and some of the complications around them. We talk about hunting education courses in Australia and some of the complications around it. It's a fantastic episode. I encourage you to check it out. Also, if you do want to check out the first episode of season two from The Huntsman that is live now, check out The Huntsman YouTube channel if you want to check that out. And it's also a bonus episode that's exclusively available on The Huntsman YouTube channel because you can also check out the main episode on Foxtel if you're interested. And finally, if you're interested in supporting this podcast, supporting me, and most importantly, supporting yourself and your hunting journey, I encourage you to check out the Australian Hunters Club. I'm a member of the club. Dodge is actually a member of the club. It's a fantastic way to meet other hunters, to go in the draw to win professionally guided hunts every single month. Dodge actually gives one of these hunts away. It's definitely worth being a member of the club. You can learn more at australianhunters.com.au. Without further ado, onto the conversation with Dodge.
I hunt animals in the pursuit of life. Life lived and life taken. I believe it's through this dance with nature and the wild places that we truly live, connect, and grow. I'm Chris Waters, the Huntsman, and these are my stories.
We're here at Accurate Hunts HQ.
Yes, we are.
Which is out in the central west of New South Wales. And I'm hosting Chris as part of his Huntsman Season 2. We are recording an episode.
The first episode.
The first episode.
Which is pretty exciting.
It is.
Because it's quite new and we're trying to figure out how we do it.
It's a journey.
It is definitely a journey. Today has been a journey, which I'm sure we'll probably talk about it.
Yeah. Talk about it now.
Well, I actually thought, a few times now in these last couple of days, you've mentioned that no one asked you questions.
No.
And even our last podcast that we did was very, it was like quite, at least on my podcast, The Huntsman.
Yeah.
It was quite themed. We didn't really have anything to do with you and your personal life. And so I'm happy to ask you questions.
You get two.
Don't you want more?
Well, maybe.
It costs you two.
No, it's just tricky going from, you know, podcasting traditionally with a co-host and then podcasting by myself.
How have you found that?
Really enjoyable.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy, maybe it's not an enjoy more or enjoy less, but I'm sure it's just very different.
Well, I do enjoy controlling things and doing things myself my own way.
Yeah.
So that's nice just to have, you don't have to ask questions. So I work for myself outside of hunting and everything.
Yep.
I run my own business.
I won't waste a question on that. I know you do fancy.
Don't burn it. Keep up your sleeve. But it's enjoyable to, you know, I don't want to do one tonight, but I want to do three tomorrow. Or
yeah, and you can.
I really like that guest, so I don't have to ask someone, what do you think about that? I organise it.
You're not as cheeky, though.
No.
I think people miss the cheek.
Yeah, well,
because you were very cheeky in your last podcast. I mean, some would say too cheeky.
Yeah, well, you would say.
But I wouldn't. I love the cheek.
There was a lot of opportunity in that one to just throw a match in and watch it burn and then sit back and let it go.
Watch the bonfire.
Watch the bonfire from a distance. And I am a pyromaniac, so that was.
Yeah. But that was part of the magic behind.
So for
people,
so well.
People, if you're watching this or listening to this and you don't know what we're talking about, Dodge used to be involved in a podcast called Endless Pursuits. Yep. It was a podcast between him and Matt. And I think some of the magic behind what made that podcast so successful and fun was the dynamic between you two. And not just the...
We ripped on
the different... Yeah, you ripped. It did get a little bit like...
Rippy,
yeah. And I remember listening to it kind of going... Oh, these kind of jokes are starting to bite on both ends, like from both of you. And it was almost like the writing was on the wall at that point. But
yeah, there was time.
But yeah, so you have less of that rippiness in your new podcast.
Yeah, I mean.
But I feel like you get more out of your guests.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And one of the things I talk about it a lot, and something I focus on is I actually don't do a lot of research going into the episodes.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah.
I know the guest, I know the theme, I don't write anything down, I don't structure it too much. And what comes of it is a genuine conversation, less of an interview.
Yeah.
And if you say something midway, I'm not looking at my sheet ready for the next question.
Yeah.
I'm focused on what you're saying.
Yeah.
Formulating an answer. That's hard because I have a terrible memory. And you're like, some guests will talk for 3 or 4 minutes, which is fine. That's what they're on there for.
Yeah.
And I forget what I wanted to ask straight away.
Yeah.
So that gets tricky. But the downside of a single person interview or conversation is quite often, unlike us, but quite often the guest we're meeting for the first time we don't have a...
You might not have chemistry or existing kind of things to draw off.
And some guests just pick up on that and run with it, and it's quite fun and funny. And then some, you never get to that point. It's just informative and learning. And that's the other reason I don't do the research. I like to learn...
While everyone else is learning at the same time.
Yeah. Because I feel like I'm formulating a question that someone listening on the other end also may be formulating at the time.
Yeah.
And my friend, Bo, is always into me. He's like, man, like, I wish I could interject and ask a question.
Yeah.
And it's the downside of podcasting.
Well, you can do it live. There are podcasts that are like that.
There is. Yeah. But what we've done, new to Accurate Hunts, you'll be available through the website soon, is we've set up a section on the podcast page where you can write in or send in an audio question.
Yeah, cool.
And what we'll do is we'll bank those up and then get the guest back to answer that question.
Yeah.
So nice. If anyone has a question about why you didn't actually get a haircut for episode one.
I did get my haircut for episode one.
No, he didn't.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And the hairdresser was really nervous.
Well, what? Because they didn't use the scissors.
You didn't want to ruin it.
Ruin it.
Ruin it. Yeah, and she knew what was at stake. Season two of the
Hunt. All riding on the haircut.
Yeah. She asked to be in the credits.
That's game.
Yeah. And she even offered the haircut for free.
Did you take it?
No, I paid for it.
Well, I hope you didn't, because it looks like she's not finished. But yeah. If someone would like to ask Chris where he gets his haircut, you can send in that question.
Yeah.
Via the website, accuratehunts.com.au.
And apparently I'm obliged to answer.
accuratehunts.com. There's no way we own the world. Yeah. So
have you ever, here's a question. Okay.
Two or three.
This is a podcast about podcasts apparently at the moment, but it's good to do. Have you, and I've always wanted to do this, but I never felt like I've needed to do it. Have you ever completely disagreed with someone on your, like a guest, and to the point where it's like uncomfortable? Because I actually think that would be really good.
Do you remember the first time we interviewed you?
Did I really disagree with you?
No, I didn't like you.
Yeah, I know that, but...
So I disagree with everything you
said. Yeah. I'm literally to the point where if we're talking now and I'm just like flat out like, no, like that's, I call BS on that. Like your virtue signaling or what, like I could literally call you out, which would be incredibly rude. But like have you ever wanted to do that?
No. And I don't know. It depends on the guests and how far you are into it. But at the moment, I'm getting guests on that are interesting and that I want to learn from.
Mm.
And quite often, I know what that is that I want to learn from them. So I don't feel like there's a guest on that. Like, I'm not looking for guests that are argumentative or are disagreeing. I'm getting things on that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So that I don't see that I would disagree with them.
My concern is, and it's especially in the Australian hunting podcast space, of which I dabble, but there are far more serious hunting podcasts than mine, but it feels like there's a regurgitation of guests that kind of go around, which is fine. There are no issues with that. But it becomes a bit formulaic, and it becomes a bit like you've got something to peddle, you're on here, or something new's happened, and it just feels like I'm not gonna say what I was thinking.
I think it's tricky because we're in a small community.
Mm.
It is a limited pool. I nearly said talent pool, but that's the wrong word. But just a limited group of people to pull from.
Yeah.
But like I've taken a slightly different direction, and the guests I've had on haven't been on others for a reason. And I'm not looking, like, it doesn't have to be the biggest expert in that field.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you Google, they'd be the first name that come up. But it's someone interesting to me, or someone that's had an interesting story or done an interesting first.
I just think there's value in chaos.
Yeah.
I just love, I think I dabble in it way too much, where I just, I just, and not even for entertainment's sake, like not even for, not trying to be sensational, not trying to be clickbaity, just because it's, I feel like we live in this world where everything is very PC. Everyone is very accommodating. Everyone is very empathetic in the and it's all in the guise of empathy. Whereas true relationship often, like, there are things that we will fundamentally disagree about, even though we are very similar in our worldviews. And that's the fun territory to explore when you have trust.
Yeah.
When you're
friendship. I don't know if I'd push down that avenue. Like, if there's someone on that, there was something about their life that I knew I didn't agree on,
yeah,
I wouldn't bring it up.
Yeah.
And if it came up, I don't know if I'd pull them up.
Yeah.
Just, okay, well, it's your belief.
Yeah.
And leave it there.
Interesting.
Talking about chaos. We're sitting out here in, no, you're not, I'm not going where you think I'm going. We're sitting out here in a buggy. This is the Accurate Hunts Ultimate Hunting
Buggy.
UHB. Ultimate Hunting Buggy. And we are surrounded with 1, 2, 3, 4 lights because it's currently about 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
And 4,000 bugs.
Yeah.
So if you see us flicking and flapping and whatnot.
If you can hear, yeah, crickets in the background.
It's not the crowd being bored at what we're
presenting. We're literally sitting in a buggy.
In the middle of nowhere.
It's a cool idea.
We've moved away from camp just because there's stuff going back on at camp.
Yeah.
A bit of skinning and butchering things because it was a successful day.
It was.
So depending on when this goes to air, whether your episode has come out or not.
I think it will have. If you're interested, can I do a plug?
Go.
Sure. If you're interested in watching season 2 of The Huntsman.
Cost you a sponsor.
Jackie.
Can I go in your credits?
You know. You can, sure. You can check out Foxtel Aurora the last Thursday of every month at 8 PM, or you can watch it concurrently on the Huntsman YouTube channel.
It's exciting.
It's very exciting. If we pull it off,
nervous.
Extremely, as you can tell from today.
Yeah, I can.
Today.
We're going to start yesterday. So today's day 2. We're on the evening.
We're on the evening. I feel like I have shot the worst I've ever shot in my life.
I concur.
Yeah.
And man, I'm not one to hide those emotions.
And initially, and here's some backstory that might give, I really dislike sighting in rifles. It's my least favorite thing to do.
Seems somewhat necessary though.
Correct. But I consider myself a hunter, not a shooter. And I understand that being a rifle hunter requires a certain level of shooting experience, shooting wisdom, shooting knowledge, shooting technical know-how, all that. I get it. So I don't fight it, but there is something about the sighting in process that just really irks me. And I think it's because I'm spending money on something, doing something that I don't really want to do, even though I know I have to. So I actually spent a fair bit of time. I got new ammunition for the rifle, got rid of the cheaper stuff that I was using.
Seiko 170 grain
powerhead blade.
Speed blades,
which are really, I really am liking. And I got a sled.
They go really well whistling past animals.
They do. I got a sled and I got a different base and I completely changed the way that I was doing sighting in and I actually enjoyed it. But I was getting great groupings. Everything was great. And so I put time in and got this gun shooting fantastic, partly because I knew that the stakes were higher when we're filming a hunting TV show. And then to come out on the first day and just perform terribly is really hard. It's at the risk of getting emotional, really hard. And it's not even that I feel a lot of pressure. But there is
welling up in your throat there.
Yeah, there. No, it's welling up. It's hard when. It's hard when you take something beyond your own needs and requirements and you shoulder the needs and requirements of other people and the financial requirements.
I'm talking about show.
And obligations you have to sponsors and things like that. And the sponsors that we have for season 2 are all fantastic. In fact, they're not like they're people. At the end of the day, who have families and businesses, and some of those businesses are bigger than others, and they understand, but you still want to do really well. You still want to put on a great show. You want to support them. You want to make sure that their products are selling because ultimately they care about the hunting industry in Australia and they want to do a good job. So everyone's got the same goal. That's what is maybe difficult for people on the outside to see when you look at a hunting show is, for the most part, everyone's trying to do the same thing. And it all comes down to like a fraction of a second, like a point where you pull the trigger or you squeeze it or you don't squeeze it or your rifle is sighted in properly or it's not. And the last day and a half, I've shot terribly. And it's been really hard to deal with that. And you're watching your timer tick down of the time that you have left and the mornings you have left and the evenings you have left and throughout the day you have left. And then you're also thinking about all the other stuff you have to film. And it's a lot of pressure. And today I kind of reached an emotional melting pot, which I haven't actually ever done in hunting. Yeah. That's what happened today.
Yeah. And coupled by the fact that you were mentioning that there's no banter and things, there was lots today.
Yeah.
And yesterday.
Correct.
And I'm not one to hide my emotions too much.
I appreciate it.
And there's a lot of disappointment from me. Mm. Not disappointment in you specifically, but my job as a guide is to host.
Yeah. Provide opportunities.
And provide opportunities. And then if the opportunity is lost, whether it be through miss or blown stalk or whatever happens, to me that was therefore unsuccessful.
Mm.
And it's like, right, we've got to go again. And
yeah.
You know, deer don't present opportunities willy-nilly like goats do.
Correct.
And that's the focus of this trip, is to try and nab some deer. There's lots of goats here. You don't have to worry about that. There's a lot.
Yeah.
But the deer, not in huge numbers at the moment. And we've had a few opportunities and some have come okay and some haven't.
Mm.
So, yeah.
You'll have to watch to find out what happens. We don't even know what's going to happen
Well, we've still got day and a half.
We've got a day and a half left.
Left. So we're halfway. And as Jessere, the cameraman, would say, you know, shows need to go like this. But at the moment, we're like,
If you're watching, or you have just watched episode one of season two, and you're like, man, they milked that drama. Man, they just like, it's like, no, not at all. Very, very real.
we'll see what gets left on the editing floor.
Yeah, 100%.
How much of my grief I gave you. I mean, missing, it's a tricky thing. I don't actually shoot that often anymore because I'm with people.
Yeah.
Hosting people that are shooting.
Yeah.
So their misses is my miss.
Yeah.
And it's the same, but I look at it a little bit that if you're not missing, sorry, I'm getting smashed by bugs and mozzies, but if you're not missing, you're probably not shooting enough because everyone misses.
Correct. Yeah.
And just you've saved those up for this trip.
It's hard when you shoot so well for an extended period of time and then you kind of feel untouchable, right? And you don't put the thought in to that you might have otherwise put into making sure you're ticking all your boxes and dotting all your I's and crossing all your T's. And that's what makes it hurt even more.
Mm.
Like that when you're doing really good, you're shooting really good and you're shooting well under pressure. Like it's hard to describe to people how difficult it is to have all the pressure of a show and a cameraman and all this different stuff, and then to deliver that thing that is going to make the episode pop and do well.
Why do it then?
Because it's things that are harder worth doing, and communicating issues like this, or not issues but realities, is important. And because I don't feel that there has been enough content like this there's been certainly content in Australia about hunting, and there's some great hunting shows, existing hunting shows, fantastic. And I'm not saying that what we're doing is better, but I think I want to try and make it better. And not even just to be like, ours is better. It's just because our industry, our culture, our community, I want it to be better. And I think shows like this push the boundary forward and can represent our community in ways that individuals can't or lobbying groups can't. And I just think they can have an impact. And so I want to do the best thing. And that's hard.
Why TV? Why a show?
Why a show?
Like there's other ways to do that.
There are other ways to do that. I mean, why a podcast? Why social media? Why any of these things? Humans.
Well, so I had Robbie from Blood Origins on the other week.
Yeah.
And he said when he first started, he's like, man, I want to be on TV. I want to have a TV show.
Mm.
And then he realized everyone was doing it. And this is America. It's a little bit different. Not everyone's doing it here. A lot of differences.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. Like, why TV?
Why TV?
Like, what do you want to get out of it?
Do you mean why TV or why YouTube or why video? What's the question? Because they're different questions.
Yeah. Why TV? So last season you just did YouTube.
Yep.
Do you think it's to reach a wider audience or?
So part of it's a wider audience. Part of it is just a personal challenge, but part of it's also when you want to grow your platform or grow your brand or grow what you're doing, there's different pieces that need to work in synergy in order to allow that to happen. One of them is finances. So the second that you hire a cameraman or a sound guy or an editing person or a producer, whatever it is, those costs start to rise and you need to find a way to offset those costs. Either the show needs to make money or you need to go into deficit, or you just pay for it out of your own pocket and just that's the expense and you're willing to do that, or you get things like sponsors. And once you get sponsors involved, then that adds another piece that has different kind of gears and different teeth that need to move in a certain way, a certain frequency. So when you get sponsors on, they want to, like a TV is attractive to sponsors. And what's interesting and fascinating that I've found is that, like, Foxtel will have a certain audience and a certain size and demographic, and YouTube has a different size and demographic as well. But there's still something about a show on like a network that's kind of feels different. Even though it may be better, it may have a wider reach, it may not. But to some people and to some sponsors, it feels different. And that might be because it is. And
Foxtel being the network.
Yeah, Foxtel being the network, or Netflix, or Stan, or Binge, or whatever it is. But yeah, it's different for different audiences too, in the different stages. So, like, for instance, you look at Meat Eater. It's a great example of starting on like a broadcasted network, and then eventually moving off that because they didn't need that, because they found that they could operate in the YouTube space alone, or their own proprietary website and be successful. And so they moved away from it. They didn't need it. A show like The Huntsman that's just completely juvenile and has very small audience, we don't have that luxury. And YouTube isn't screaming and just saying, oh, let's just throw all this audience at you. Oh, yeah, you want audiences from here? Yeah, we'll give them to you. Like, it's really hard to grow on YouTube. And you can do all the best content you want, and it doesn't necessarily seem to change sometimes. And that certain kinds of content will grow. Like, if I did a headshot montage of thermal fox headshots, I know I could get 300,000 views if I wanted to, but I don't want to do that. I don't think that's helpful. And so I'm trying to do something that I think is wholesome, that I think is helpful. And there are platforms like Foxtel that could help us achieve that by increasing our audience and giving us exposure. It's a long-winded answer.
Like I said, sometimes my guests don't give me much opportunity to talk.
What did you expect to have a fellow podcaster on?
I want to circle back because you said something that I remember. Surprising. You said that
you're so much more thoughtful now, Don.
Hunter, not a shooter.
No, I didn't say that.
You're a hunter more than a shooter?
Maybe I did say that. I probably did.
What do you think you said?
I.
What do you feel you want to say in that?
I
hunter first, and shooter second.
I shoot because it facilitates the hunting.
So
I'm a rifle hunter because it facilitates.
I started off shooting and progressed into hunting.
Yeah.
And I've said it 3,000 times, that the stages of being a hunter, and it starts with being a shooter. Now, there's a friend of mine who is heavily in the hunting scene, does amazingly well, highly successful,
mm-hmm.
wasn't a shooter. And he went away recently and some shots presented that were quick
mm-hmm.
or a little bit uneasy, a bit uncomfortable, longer range, and personal pressure on himself probably, but he didn't, he told me that he didn't do well in those situations. And I've found that, like, when I travel, I generally would say to people, Australians are better shooters and hunters than overseas clients because we do a lot more shooting.
Sure.
From the vehicle, moving animals, you know, rabbits, foxes, things like that, smaller targets, random distances.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you miss that, you miss a lot of fundamentals of hunting and shooting, of shooting.
Yeah.
And then you move into the hunting stage, and if you've skipped that, well, then you might be working out how to find animals and things, but you're missing a lot of the key entry-level things.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Shooting from any rest you've got, tree, no tree, long grass, backpack.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like, as a shooter, you know, I'm at the range. I was at the range initially or whatnot. And you do those things. Some ranges you can, some ranges you can't. Others, like, you just have to sit on the bench. But then, you know, if you're on the top of the ute and the ute's moving fast, and then you pull up and you've got split seconds to take the shot and things like that. And I think I've seen a lot of people that, well, not a lot, I've seen a few people on the side where they've missed that shooting thing, and now it's, they've sort of nearly got to go back to basics.
I mean, I find it fascinating that in places like Victoria, you can go and get your firearms license and go do your test and then get your PTA and get your first rifle. You can go buy a 30 caliber rifle, and then you can find yourself in the middle of the high country having never fired a rifle before with a gun, a loaded gun, pointing at a deer. I just think that's
good insane or bad insane?
Terrible. Terrible. Like, dangerous. And I don't, it makes my mind melt to understand how that can happen or why we allow it. And I know some people will be screaming at me saying, like, the last thing we need is more red tape and legislation and rules and requirements. But firstly, it's far more dangerous than I think people realize. And secondly, it produces poor hunters. And part of it is what you're alluding to, is that it's not helping people understand how to shoot. Like, no one taught me how to shoot. People taught me how to pass a firearms license test, but that has actually nothing to do with shooting. It has everything to do with firearm safety, firearm storage.
But not using.
Laws around firearms. But it has nothing to do with actually learning how to fire a firearm successfully and achieve a goal of whatever it is, hitting a target, hitting a deer, whatever. I just find that absolutely fascinating.
I want to draw parallels between that and sort of getting your car license.
Correct.
Where to get your license, you need to go and do a test on a computer for your L's, and then you drive with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's in New South Wales. I'm not sure how it applies otherwise, but you sort of, like, I grew up driving on the farm.
So yeah.
That stuff sort of happened easily. But for those in the city, I think, like, their first opportunity actually driving a vehicle was on a main road or something. Although they've got their parents with them.
Yeah.
Or guardian, whatever. They've got someone with them. And then in a firearm situation, you're suggesting a situation where that hasn't happened. And I'm like, that didn't happen to me. I had someone take me under their wing, Rod, and good family friend of mine, and taught me the basics of safety and how to shoot, shooting cans, targets, moving away up to animals. But that doesn't happen for everyone. And I think this whole COVID thing happened, and then there was a huge push of our licensed hunters, and that grew, but the basic part got skipped.
Well, this is a concern that I have in general about the hunting community, and why I'm such a huge advocate for clubs in general, is we're in society in general, we're seeing the breakdown of communities.
I just got bitten on the bum. Right?
Did it hurt?
It's,
or did it feel good?
No, not good.
But so we're seeing the breakdown of communities. And when you break down communities, you're breaking down some of the core fabric of society and the way that we learn, the way that we're accountable, the way that we grow. And so people have to find alternative avenues to fill that gap in some situations where it's necessary. And it could be reading a book, it could be reading a magazine or like watching a YouTube clip, whatever. But there are some things that just shouldn't be given over to that territory, like learning how to fire a firearm. Like, don't, if you're wanting to learn how to fire a firearm, don't go watch a bunch of YouTube videos. Well, let me rephrase that. Don't only do that. Go find someone. Go to a range.
Like, what's something that they might be able to do?
Oh. Like,
what's something a beginner hunter could probably do to?
Oh, I don't know.
Learn a little bit.
I don't know. What, do you know anything?
I do know some things. I thought you might want to bring it up.
You could join a hunting club.
That's not what I was referencing. It's not all about you, Chris.
Like, did she just set me up?
Oh, no. It's a good plug for accurate hunts.
Oh, well, no. That's a great point. Okay, you were thinking selfishly and I was thinking selfishly. How good's that? What you should do, and I encourage all new hunters.
Find someone. And I was like, oh, you might be heading in.
No, you did. I was thinking you should join a club. Well, so first of all, you should join the Australian Hunters Club because you get discounts on guides. And using guides and doing workshops and education courses is incredibly important. And I've said this for a long time. That's why I made Hunting Trips Australia, because I think every new hunter their first hunt should be with a guide. And I think that you can shave years off your hunting progression by spending a day or two with a guide. And it's tiny little things that you'll learn, and it's huge big things. And it's like pointing in the dirt and saying, that's a print, and it's going in this direction, and it's this far apart because it's this, and what, like, just stuff like you can't learn. So
what have you learned this trip?
I'm going to put my foot in it and say I've relearned something, which is actually not true, because you can't relearn something. It just meant you never learned it in the first place. Although I've claimed that I've learned this. And I've told people that I've learned this, and I've told people to learn this. And so I'm an absolute liar, and I'm happy to say that. You should pretty much guaranteed always check the zero on your rifle before you're hunting, especially if you've driven somewhere new. Especially if you're going after like an animal that's important or a trophy or it's not just like going and shooting a bunny. Like if there's gravitas that's sitting behind the hunt and it's important, you should definitely go and zero your rifle. Even if you spend a lot of time sighting it in and making sure your ammo is good. Because it's important, because things can happen. And you can do all... Here's a great example. You can do all the right things. You can spend all that time sighting it in. You can make sure you've got great rings on your rifle holding your scope on. You can put it in a hunting bag, in a soft shell case that's in a hard case, that like all that stuff, and it can still get knocked out by 2 inches, which yet...
At 100,
which yet 300, like that's a lot. That's a miss. That's a clean miss in some situations.
A bug in my ear. Yeah, and that's important.
What have you learned on this trip?
To remember. The podcasting at night with lights is tricky.
Dodge had this fantasy. He's like, wouldn't it be so cool if we did this? And now he's just like,
regretting it. Might not make full time on this one. Getting smashed on the neck.
Could have a half hour podcast.
We'll come back tomorrow in daylight hours. I've been reminded, I haven't done the filming side of it for a little while. Like, I've done a lot of hunts in the last few years where it was clients or friends or whatnot, but not the cameraman. And I forget what it's like carrying those extra people around. And so quite often shots present quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work for filming.
Yeah.
So today, for example, we were in some really thick, I say thick, it's a really cool part of the property where it's very thick timber, but it's very visible. There's no undergrowth. It's just trunks and then canopy.
You've got corridors to shoot through, but they're slim corridors.
Yeah, glimpses, fleeting glimpses of animals and things. And the ground has 6 inches of crunchy leaf cover.
Yeah.
I've had a bit of rain up here in the last 2 weeks, but this last week has been quite warm.
It's still cornflakes.
Everything's really loud. And four of us walking through there is loud.
Yeah.
And we had the wind in our favor and we were still just seeing things running.
Yeah.
And these guys, there came a point where we were like, righto, it's the heat of the day. It was like 1:30 or something.
Yeah.
They pulled me up. They're like, oh, like, we think that we should probably change our game plan and maybe. And I was like, oh, look, okay. I had a goal. Like I wanted to get to a certain point. We weren't there yet. And
Dodge likes his goals.
And I do like to achieve a goal. And I was like, yeah, like that's a bit, can't we just stay and shoot those deer over there?
Yeah, you didn't.
And we were like on camera and I just happened to glance across. And someone asked me a couple of courses ago, you told us to use our binoculars, but you don't use yours very often. And I don't, in that situation, it's situational, in that tight cover with little glimpses, I'm looking for inconsistency.
Yeah, you're better off to find the initial point of data from like a flick of an ear.
And that's what this was, exactly what this was. I literally saw, and it looked to me like you think a woody woodpecker hanging off the side of a tree, pecking at the tree. So I could see a tree and I could see this thing on the side of it moving. Look, consistently, I was like, that just flagged my attention as inconsistent with nature.
Yeah.
And if it was woody woodpecker, I would have wanted to look at it. So anyway, why can't we go and shoot those three deer there?
But do you know what's interesting? And I'm not just saying this to save face, but literally like a minute or two before that, as we were having this conversation, I saw what I thought was a flick of a bird. Like, and you're like, oh, movement, and your eyes are immediately drawn to it. And I was like, that's just a flick of a bird. And I didn't, because I was having a conversation, I didn't bother looking up and I just put it out of my mind. But that was like the flick of an ear.
Yeah.
It was like the white of the inside of the doe's ear.
And that's what it looks like, flicking. A magpie or something flicking through.
Just like a little bird, like a little finch or a little sparrow or something. Just like,
and then, confirmation with binos. But we were just lucky at that point. We had strong wind in our face. They were only, 114 or something.
Yeah.
But they were across a little gully. It was quite windy, so there was a lot of noise between us and them.
Yeah.
So we were lucky, and you'll have to watch the episode to see what happens.
Yeah.
That one might make the editing floor. Look, it might not. We'll see.
This is what's tricky about content in general.
Well, I actually thought...
You've got a 24-minute show, and you've got... You need to run a story that has an arc, and you've got a lot of content, and a lot of it doesn't make it in general. But then also, you can overstimulate people. You can take people on too many emotional
rollercoasters. What you're missing.
Yeah, I'm just trying to really. I'm not trying to overstimulate people.
When you say arc, you mean that arc.
One arc.
Like that. You don't want to go that. You don't want your show to dive off at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
You want it to be on the rise. That shot was not on the rise. It was definitely on the bottom of the arc. But it was, anyway, it was a good reminder to me. I nearly need to guide and hunt a little bit differently with you guys.
You know what's really fascinating and interesting that you say that? I knew that you would be like this, in that you would have that presence of mind and realization, because when we've hunted with other people in the past, they're just in guide mode. And they're like, I'm just guiding. And you're like... often a guide will take control because that's their job, and they want to take control and they need to take control. For varying degrees of depending on who the client is and what they're doing. But it's like, that's not what we need. We don't need you to control. In fact, we need to control it to some degree. We need to tell you when to slow down. We need to tell you when we need to do a shot from here, or when we need to explain something or whatever it is. What we need you to do is like, give us the best opportunity to get on an animal. And there's been times in the past where a guide has pretty much dictated the whole episode because we were doing season one last year, we didn't know really what we were doing. And to be honest, even Jesse Ray has only been towards the end of the cameraman towards the end of that season. There were times where it was just me, and I just didn't feel confident enough to take the reins. And because guides are so confident, because they have to be. They have to get you on. They have to do something very, very difficult and get you onto an animal. And it's very difficult when you've got four people crunching through the bush.
It is. It's noisy. But I have a bit of understanding of those things, and I can see, like, if something's going to present and I'm going to tell you something, I'll say,
yeah,
I'm going to tell him we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And then that's what you see on film. So it is, we're not repeating stuff. We're not making themes up.
No.
All I'm doing is saying, cameraman, I need you here to...
In fact, some of what we are consciously trying to do...
Huh? Yeah, that noise?
Yeah. Something that we're consciously trying to do in this season is try and actually break that third wall down even more and just be like, we're making a show. People know we're making a show. We're not going to hide the fact that we're making a show, because you can very much film it in such a way. And like, for instance, Meat Eater would be an example of this, where... If you become so deep, you can get to the point where you're so deeply engaged in the hunt that you feel like you're just a person in the hunt and there's no cameras. And that's great, but there's a lot of work that's required, a lot of faking, not faking, a lot of
recreating,
a lot of angling, I'm going to say, positioning to make sure that you can feel that way.
Can you ever watch TV again the same?
Me, no. Not at all. I can't listen to music the same as well. I mean, I have a background in audio engineering as well. And whenever I hear music, I just hear, the components. I hear different instruments. I hear how they're mixed, how they pan. I hear EQing. I hear the little interesting effects. Like there's different theories of music. I don't hear music.
I hear none of that.
You just hear.
That's not what I hear. I love music. It's in the background. Don't ask me what I listen to because I don't care. As long as there's something in the background.
Mainly Taylor Swift.
No, but I don't pick up on those things in the background. I remember like doing the previous podcast where Matt would, you know, he was the same. He would pick up on things and edit them out. And I was like, did you need to? He's like, yeah, you can really hear it. And I was like, no one with the untrained ear couldn't.
Yeah.
But you know, the audio quality was great. What was produced. So
yeah.
No, I don't know what else I've learned. I've probably learned that. No, I can't bag you out yet.
Yes, you can.
No.
Go on.
No, hiding emotions is tricky.
Hiding? Are you hiding your emotions?
Yeah. Yeah.
Frustration?
Yeah. Yeah, being visibly disappointed that you missed stuff.
What's interesting as well is there's this weird, and I think all humans do this, but especially in a high-pressure situation is I'm trying to like regulate my, you're doing the same, regulating your emotions. For a number of different reasons, partly because you need to regulate your emotions as a human being to be stable and productive and all that kind of thing. But also part of it's like, I don't want to come across as a sook and I don't want them to see me as a sook. Therefore, I'm going to manage my emotions in a certain way, even if I'm not being sooky. Part of it's like, I know Dodge is disappointed in me. I'm disappointed in me. And I can see that he's managing his emotions. Like, it's just so complicated and weird and...
I wasn't doing very well at managing it.
No, you do. Because
I do it through humour.
I was going to say, you use humour to...
Yeah, which is, it's like when someone says, oh, I hate you, am I well? Like, it doesn't...
Emoji?
It doesn't take away from what you've said. Mm. It just makes you feel like you've said it in a lighter way.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there was a quiet drive back.
Well, all I was thinking is just let time pass, Chris. Like, just let time pass. Time heals all wounds. Just let it pass. And sure enough, you know, this afternoon we were sitting in the river having a good time.
Yeah. That was a good chill out session.
It was great.
It was hot.
And then afterwards, all the boxes got ticked real quickly. Like you had like the cleanest, like you said, we had a mission. I'll even say it so you can, if you want to watch it, you can go check it out. We wanted to shoot a kid goat, specifically a kid goat, because we want to cook a certain dish. And we made the time this afternoon to go and do it. And it was like, we're going to go do this and then we're going to sit and glass deer for the afternoon because tomorrow we're going to cook that goat. And Geordie was up and we were going to do it. And we needed to get sub 100 because we wanted a headshot. And it just was like, easy.
43
meters.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Made it happen.
It just happened. And sometimes that's what happens. It just happens. And that's what happened. It was good.
Yeah. And this place is special as far as numbers of goats.
It is. It's silly.
Silly billies.
It's silly. Like when you said, we've got goats. I was like, yeah, okay. A lot of goats.
Background wise, obviously Chris and I did a episode on his show last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he rang and said, we were talking about something randomly. We speak pretty regularly. And it was, you're interested in doing an episode this season. I said, yeah. Cool.
Because the episode that we did last season was kind of like a throw together.
It was.
It was like we were going to be outside of Sydney.
Two episodes into one.
Yeah. But not even really. Like, it was
into one trip.
It was interesting that we managed to get enough of the episode with you in it to make an episode because we were literally, we spent the majority of that trip with Alex hunting goats and that was heaps of fun. And we allocated a day less than this.
We got to my place like 10:30 and it was probably 1:30 or like 1 o'clock or so by the time we got to the hunting area and we were home before dark.
Yeah. It was crazy. Anyway, so that was the experience that we had.
Yeah, that was the first episode. But then you came to me and said you wanted to do this and background on this property we're on now, I'm calling it Accurate Hunts HQ, but it's...
this GPS coordinates for anyone interested.
Yeah. 100 degrees left of nowhere near your business.
Yes.
Nanya.
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 It's next to Nanya.
It's next to Nanya National Park. I'll give you the address if you book a hunt out here.
Right. Yeah, you'll figure it out pretty quickly. Code.
But it's a magic place, and this place didn't come about by accident. It came about through years of doing accurate hunts the way we have, and then someone approached me and said, hey, we've got this. Are you interested in doing some guiding on it? And I jumped at it, and now we have sole access, and we've locked up this property just for our own purposes.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't happen. Those situations don't happen, and
no.
It's too good to knock back, so we did it. Now, it's only a few hours from Sydney, which makes it great, but what makes it really good is its abundance of animals and extremely light hunting pressure.
Correct.
Because it's just us.
Yeah.
It's just me. And you've seen that today with just even the way the other animals react after a shot.
Mm.
It's like, oh, what was that?
Yeah.
Oh, there's some grass down here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or other animals turn up that you didn't know were there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got just gorgeous terrain, interesting terrain.
It could be easy. It could be hard.
Today, a diverse terrain. Like what I've been conscious of as we've hunted these last 2 days is putting myself in the mindset of someone who's doing your course for the first time. And I've been thinking, and I think I even said to you on the first day, I'm like, geez, this is just like the best place to do a hunting course. Like if I was new to hunting and I wanted to learn and I knew all the things I know now, I'd be like, oh my goodness, this is awesome. Like it's, and I get it because people probably have that experience, but.
And the tricky part is trying to manage their expectations because they leave here and I need to explain to them what you've just experienced is not
the norm. It's pretty special, yeah.
It's not the norm.
Yeah.
Like, I've been doing this for, I don't know, 10 years, 12 years, 15, yeah. Whatever. This is the most amount of goats I've seen on a property.
And it's, like, which is incredibly forgiving, right? That you can go and you can say the pressure is off, completely off, if you're going to be taking an animal, and we can take so much time, it's ridiculous. We can set up and not do shots. And look, I actually think that is probably if I was to run a hunting course, one of the things that I would really specify right off the bat is you don't need to take the, like, let's set up for a shot. If you're not 100% confident, let's not do that shot.
Sure.
And I'd rather you do that 3 or 4 times, which can't happen when you're in like a state forest and you're seeing a deer fleeting. You've got to take that chance and learn the hard way.
One of the things we do in that, so we force a situation where we'll go hunting, and sometimes I do this, sometimes I don't. Like I always do the second part, but the first part is I'll empty their magazine and not tell them.
And you hear a click?
Well, I want them to go through the process and not know they're not shooting it. Because I want them to still have the nerves. Because if you tell them about it, then if you tell them about it, then they oh, we're
where's
just
the bang?
We're just so the second part is we go through a process. If they know, if I can't hide it, sometimes you can't hide it.
Everyone's gonna know it now. Everyone's gonna be checking.
No, I'm just giving away my secrets.
You 100%
just gonna pay for those secrets. No, but the second part is we dry fire. So
yes, that's really
we'll set up on an animal, we'll work on the rest, and there's thousands of rest options. So whatever they've got, whatever I've got, we use whatever is available. A tree, branch, whatever, ground, bipods, tripods.
Mm.
Aim at the goat.
Yeah.
Take your time.
Yeah.
And then I'll ask questions. What's your heart rate doing right now?
Mm.
What can you hear?
Mm.
What can you see? What do you feel?
Yeah.
And then we'd like talk about it because these are we're talking, you know, breeze in face situations, goats, preferably 100 or sub.
Yeah.
And you can still communicate. You don't have to talk loud.
Yeah.
Just lean in and whisper.
Yeah.
And then go through the motions, bolt up, bolt back, bolt forward, bolt down, comfortable, squeeze the trigger when you're ready, pretend like you've shot it, do that 3 times, and then...
Then shoot it.
Well, sometimes we walk away.
Yeah.
That's done.
Yeah.
That's the part of the lesson.
Yeah. That's great.
Have to shoot it.
That's so good. I mean, even like, this is something I still remind myself because I sometimes forget it. And it's such a little thing, is It's like you're holding the rifle, you're in a rest. And I find myself sometimes just because there's so much adrenaline and some, like, you're so bound, you're like grip, like white knuckles, and you can feel the tension. And then you instantly relax, and all of a sudden the rifle feels so much better. You're in so much more control. And I actually will often look at my knuckles to see if they're white. And then I'll visibly, you'll even maybe even see me videos visibly relax and be like, nope. And then, okay, now we're shooting. And it's one of those things that I liken it to surfing. When you're learning to surf and actually properly surf, when you're cutting in on a wave, the opportunity that you have to learn how to do that is so small. Like, it's like a half a second where you have to then turn into a wave. And you have to basically repeat that a bunch of times until you can figure it out. And hunting's the same. Like, when you're in that moment where there's a lot of pressure and you're looking at an animal and you really want to get that animal, you don't have much brain space to bandwidth, mental bandwidth, to be like, am I comfortable? Because even you say, it said to me today, are you comfortable? And I was like, yes, I'm comfortable. But what yes means is, I think I'm comfortable enough with the adrenaline I have at the moment, which is probably, the answer is probably no. You can probably do a lot better. You can probably get a lot more stable
with the situation provided, I'm confident.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
So I think that running a course like that, where you have the opportunity and multiple opportunities to dry fire on an animal, is great.
It's great
for the goat too. Thank goodness. I thought those people were going to shoot me.
We ran this course several years ago, back end of COVID, during COVID even, and then it got shut down because of COVID again. But we lost our property that we're doing on the people sold. There's a moth on the microphone.
He's gone. He's all right.
Probably sounds better than you.
Probably. Less whingy.
And I lost my goat property.
Yeah.
And a few people said, oh, I'll just run the course. I said, you can't run a beginner hunting course without hunting.
Yeah.
Without, like, you can hunt just in the bush, but unless there's animals.
Yeah.
And I also think it's very hard to run it without killing.
Correct.
And that's very hard to do. So I do.
Without killing.
There were some properties I had where there was hunting opportunities, but it was hunting, you like may go and not get anything.
Yeah.
You can't do that in an education course.
Yeah.
So what we actually did, we, not on this property, but our previous one, we went and shot a goat the night before the course. So we had one just in case it didn't go to plan the next day or bad weather.
And then don't tell me that you set it up on a rock and you're like,
hey, it was in the pool room.
It's mine, but it's there.
Hey, there's a blind goat that's still standing there from this morning. We're going to shoot that cataract out of its face. But I forgot where I was going. I went on a blind goat conversation.
You're talking about the necessity of killing.
Things have got to die for the education course. And we do two styles of courses. We do a group situation where the clients are quite often new. They don't have firearms licenses. Mm. They might want to try it and see if they like it and get their hands dirty. Well, they might have their firearms license but not be super confident and just want to learn.
Yeah.
And that's a group setting up to like 10 or 12 people.
Yeah.
And in that course, it's important to note that those people don't shoot. No firearms. They're not allowed to bring firearms. We do the harvesting on that course.
Yeah.
Because there's people who don't have their firearms license.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're careful with, you know, they don't handle and things. So I go and harvest with them.
Yeah.
You know, hunting. So they're right next to me and we're going through that.
They process. Do everything but pull the trigger.
Correct. And then as soon as it's dead, then it flat out into the gutting and things. But on the other courses where they're, you know, one-on-one, two-on-one. It's not for people who don't have their firearms license.
Yeah.
It's for people who have it and want to learn.
And can I say something that's probably not obvious to everyone, but having insight into this industry, I know this to be very, very true. There is a big difference between going on a guided hunt and going on a hunting education course.
Yes, definitely.
And I made the assumption when I got into hunting early that every guided hunt was like an education hunt, and the guy would walk you through the process of identifying prints and learning how to stalk and all that. And it's just not true. Most guides, I'm going to say most guided hunts in Australia are about the guide getting you onto an animal, probably a trophy, or in some situations a meat animal, but probably a trophy. There are very few, if you're interested and you're listening or you're watching, there are very few hunting courses in Australia, practical hunting courses. There are, for instance, there are some guides that do it, and some of them don't even, I'm not even sure if some of them consciously are aware of the fact that they're offering a course.
And on the flip side, I don't think the guides that aren't doing it know that it's wanted.
Correct.
They assume that someone coming on a guided hunt wants to be guided on a hunt.
Yeah.
They don't want to be taught.
Yeah. And which is, it sounds crazy, but like if a new hunter comes to you, if I was a guide and I'm a Samba guide in Victoria and a new person called me up and said, oh, I'd like to go on a guided hunt, please. You assume that I'd be thinking, oh, they want to learn how to hunt. But that's not what a lot of guides think. Mm. They just think, oh, you want me to guide you onto a Samba stag.
Because clients of the past, if you said, oh, you know, that's it, they'd be like, yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've shot
yeah.
20 things.
Yeah.
They're just there for the trophy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's managing expectations.
I mean, for a lot of them even as well, and I actually, when we've filmed with guides in the past, I like to tease it out of them. Because for a lot of them, it's all up in their heads. And they're just, like any hunt, they're just processing data. They're making little micro decisions. They're reading the environment. They're making, and then that they just, and so for instance, I'd be hunting with someone like Gordon from Northeast Experience, and you look at a print, and he's like, oh, there's a print. And you're like, oh, cool. Like, what can you tell me about that print? And he's like, I can tell you that it's, you know, it was made this morning. I'm like, how do you know it was made this morning? I know it was made this morning because you can see there's a blade of grass that's been indented into the print and it hasn't sprung back up yet. It will either spring back up or it will wither. And that's how you can tell. And I was like, that's really useful to know. But like, he wouldn't have told me that.
Yes.
Just off the back and said, hey,
look, because from a...
Because he
from a guided point of view, that's not important.
No, he's just like, he knows what that data is telling him and he will make an informed decision regarding it. I don't actually need to know it as the guest, as the client for him to be successful in his guiding. He doesn't offer education.
The courses we do with medium experienced people are actually harder because they know a little bit of information.
Can you tell us the stories?
No.
You already told me some stories.
Tell me which one.
You were telling me a story as we were going.
Just give me a reference and I'll remember it.
The kid.
I can't remember.
The kid. When we were going after the kid.
Yeah.
You said there was two people with you, one person. I'm not even going to go there, Dodge. If I have to spell it out for you.
Which one?
Nah, it's all right. Don't worry.
Didn't listen. That one?
You didn't listen.
No, the client.
Oh, there was that one. Yeah. That was a good example. Go with that one.
Well, it was. No, I still want to know what your other one was.
I want chaos. I want to feel the fire.
Anyway, so two clients hunting, and I said to one...
Education.
Beginner education guided course. I said, I need you to stay here and stand still. We were on what the situation was. We'd spotted three goats in front of us, and they were about 180, 200 metres away. Between us and them was grass.
Mm.
And sort of knee-height grass, a bit less, but it was flat. And they couldn't see us because we'd just crested over and I just spotted them.
Mm.
But from there further forward, we were in full visibility.
Yeah.
So I said, because I had one that was going to shoot next, I said to him, you're going to come forward with me. And number two, I need you to stay here. Now, I'll recap that and after I tell the rest of it. So that's what happened. He stayed there and we moved forward. Now, in the moving forward, we belly crawled that whole way.
Mm.
I had camera and tripod, and Hunter had gun, and I don't know, he's carrying something else, his binos or something. And he, you know, we were sort of side by side the whole way, and we made a really good stalk, and we got into this log, and we were 70, I think, from these goats. Two of them were bedded, and one of them was standing, and the one we wanted to shoot was bedded. So what we did was we waited. You run out of battery.
Yeah. I'm going to change the battery.
Okay. Pause the story.
What a cliffhanger. What's going to happen next? Tune in to find out more.
So, we'd moved in and we were up on the log.
Number two's behind you. Number one's up with you.
Right next to me. Belly crawled. We're at 70. Bedded goat was the one we wanted to shot. We were very calm. This was our dry fire situation. So, it was bedded and we were going to shoot it when it was standing. So, we were just waiting. But we dry fired on it a few times and he was very calm, comfortable. We had a very good rest. He had a pretty heavy gun, but we had a very good rest on this log. And all of a sudden, goat number three stood up and pinged us. Full alert.
For no reason. Wind hadn't changed.
Nothing had changed. I was like, man, that's okay. Whatever. That's odd. Not too much of an issue because we actually needed to stand up to shoot it.
Yeah.
I said, just get ready. Number three to the left is the one we want to shoot. It's starting to look alert. It's not looking at us, but it's looking at the other one, thinking, why are you alert?
Mm.
So it went to stand up, and in doing so, it sort of stretched. They sort of...
Yeah.
It hopped up with its haunches first, and then, you know...
Arched its back
and had a stretch, and then stood up, pinged us. I was like, we haven't moved. What's happening?
Yeah.
For some reason...
Is it my cologne?
Definitely not. For some reason... I looked over my shoulder and hunter number two was like 10 meters behind us standing up. I had nothing. And I said, anyway, so I just glanced at that and looked back and I said, shoot them now, they're about to run.
Yeah.
And he was already on it and he was comfortable. We'd done the processes and he, perfect shot.
Yeah,
dropped
great.
It on the spot.
Beautiful.
Shoulder shot and it, you know, dropped on the spot, rolled over and kicked and that was the end of it. And nothing really happened about old mate behind me immediately because of the situation. We were all happy and whatnot. And then we approached the goat and I said to him, what were you doing behind us? He said, oh, I couldn't see. So to me, I gave him an instruction and he disobeyed. Not disobeyed, it didn't listen, whatever.
Yeah.
But also to me, I was like, man, you weren't clear enough with your instructions.
Yeah, correct.
So it was a learning experience for me. In hindsight, and now, sorry to everyone coming in the future, you're going to get a conversation of, I'm going to ask you to stay here now, and this is why it's important. Mm. And if you come further forward and you ruin this opportunity, we may not get another one. So I'm going to ask you, please stay here. I'll show you the video later. That's what you're going to get. But his response was, I made it stand up and you shot it. So he sort of created the situation, which in fairness, exactly how it happened, just didn't need to happen that quickly.
Yeah.
So I learned that. And every time we do one of these courses, I learn.
Yeah.
Because the very first one we did, we use terms, like hunting terms. I can't even think of any, if you can think of one right now, that's just normal for your and my conversation.
Glassing. Glassing is a great thing.
So we say, oh, we're going to go and learn how to glass that hill. And we were going to teach them how to glass the hill. What we failed to realize was we first need to teach them what the word means.
Yeah.
Before we teach them how to do.
They're out there and they're like, now glass the hill. And they're like, oh, use my binoculars to look at the opposite hill.
I left them in the classroom. Like,
yeah.
So every time we do a course, we learn, it reminds us to scale back the discussion, which in turn makes it longer.
Yeah.
Can stretch the course on. And
But it sharpens you. Sharpens.
It does. It reminds you what you've forgotten.
Where can people go if they want to book a hunt with you? A guided hunt or
soon,
an education course?
Inside scoop, soon you'll be able to do it on Hunting Trips Australia.
Yeah, huntingtrips.com.au.
.com.au, because he doesn't own the world. But alternatively to that, accuratehunts.com, no AU, and we've got a pretty extensive website. You can also buy merchandise on there, because to support show, what did you say? What do I have to say? to keep a show like this running.
To keep a show like this independent.
Independent. We need money.
Yeah.
This stuff's not free.
And don't feel bad about asking for that.
Nah, it's not asking for money, but there's merchandise available if you want to look sick and wear some new...
I like that. I like that better than your other one.
I like the design. We're running out of light out there. A&H hats, Accurate Hunts hats. We've got shirts and hoodies too. But yeah, so the hunting trips are on there. The education course is on there, short and long. We have no date sets on those at the moment. So the way it works is you put an inquiry in.
Yeah.
And
which is the same as Hunting Trips Australia. Just express your interest in coming along. Ask questions if you have them.
So on there, we've got a brief outline on the course, the costings, what's included, what's not. The courses vary in what's included depending on the client. Sometimes we do full catering like we are this trip. On the bigger courses, that's what we offer because there's 12 or so people. You can't have 15 people eating different dinners.
Yeah.
On the smaller courses, we usually provide dinner, and that's a game meat-based dinner. Like tonight, we had wild pork
so
thingies.
Good.
What were they? Wraps? Sliders?
Corn fritters.
Anyway.
Beautiful. Chimichurri.
Slow-cooked wild pork shoulder. It was amazing. But, so on the smaller courses, the two-on-ones, one-on-ones, so we provide dinner, and then the clients provide their own lunch and snacks and things.
Yeah.
It's a bit hard to just cater for two people.
Well worth it. If you're interested, go check out the websites that we've linked. I'll put links below if you're watching this or listening to this on The Huntsman, but you could also be watching this or listening to this on
That's right, it's a joint podcast.
Yeah.
So you're going to get both.
Yeah, saturated.
Both benefits.
And so that's my conversation with Dodge. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you are interested in finding out what happened during that hunt, it is quite a good episode. I encourage you to check it out. That's season 2, episode 1 of The Huntsman, available on The Huntsman YouTube channel. And there's also a bonus episode exclusively available on the YouTube episode that kind of carries on from that hunt as well. So you've got a bit of content you can check out if you're interested in doing so. Also, if you're getting started in your hunting journey, or maybe you've been a hunter for a long time, but just want to sharpen up your skills, I definitely recommend Dodge's hunting workshops. There's a few different situations for different levels of experience in hunting. Definitely worth checking out. I will drop a link below where you can learn about his hunting workshops as well as the guided hunts that he offers. He's fantastic. He's a fantastic guy. He's a great person, and he's well worth connecting with if you want to grow as a hunter. Otherwise, happy hunting.